The Electoral College was designed by the Founding Fathers to ensure that fairness would always result in presidential elections. That design has been pushed to the side by Democrats who, well, basically due to two losses in 2000 and 2016, are calling for an end to the Electoral College and instead have presidential elections decided strictly by the popular vote. Does this idea ignore the positive role that the Electoral College has played? Joining us now to examine this debate is resident scholar with the Institute for Policy Innovation, Dr. Merrill Matthews. Thanks for being here today, Doctor.
Thank you for having me.
And the website for the Institute for Policy Innovation, IPI.org. Now, I'm not going to read the Constitution. If you go to our website, though, you can download a study of the Constitution, be your own constitutional scholar, as I frequently say. But the Electoral College comes in under Article 2 of the Constitution. Just basically, what was the intent of it?
The intent was to try to sort of round out the problem of having populous states, which would have a lot of votes, and smaller states, which wouldn't. And so the smaller states felt like they didn't want to be overshadowed. So what the framers decided to do was to come up with a formula that would sort of help out the smaller states. And what happens is that members of Congress, every state has the number of electoral votes that represents its number of members in the House of Representatives and its two senators. Since every state has two senators, that gives those states with very few members in the House a little bit more of an edge. Not a lot, but a little bit more of an edge. And it's an attempt to try to keep the majority from exercising a tyranny over the minority. They wanted to be able to make sure that the states, as the creators of the Constitution, had a stronger voice, even if they were a small state.
It was certainly a great case example of foresight, too, because in those days of the 13 states, it wasn't that much of a discrepancy between state sizes. There were some, but not certainly to the point where we see today. If you look at, compare Rhode Island to California, for example.
Right. It's a very good point. When they did this, you had 13 states that created. There was some variation, but nobody knew about Texas or California or very large states in the future. And so it wasn't done with an intent to try to make sure Californians didn't count as much as a small state. It was done as a way to kind of balance it. And people need to remember, it's the states that created the federal government. The states also create the local and county government. But the states are at the center of this, and so it was the states that created it, and it was states were given a fair amount of freedom to determine how to do this, how to pick their electoral college members and other things. A lot of that responsibility was left up to the states because it was the states that were the driving force.
Now, as I said in the introduction, for those who are really uninitiated to politics, you have the popular vote, you have the Electoral College. So over the course of all these centuries, all these decades, all these years, all these elections, how many times have the popular vote and the Electoral College not gelled?
Four. And so not many, and two of those were in the last two elections, were in recent elections, 2000 with Al Gore and George W. Bush, and then 2016. And because Democrats came out with a slightly larger percentage of the vote in those two but didn't win the election, they've sort of taken on this notion that we need to go to the popular vote. Now, you have to ask them closely if they mean, do you mean popular vote or do you mean majority win? Because there have been a number of elections in which the winning president's candidate, Bill Clinton, both times never won a majority of the vote. He was always under 50%, but the Electoral College went strongly in his favor, and so he won, and nobody really questioned it. The Electoral College actually helps out if you don't have a majority, and we've had several elections where the winner didn't actually get a majority of votes, but did have the plurality of votes.
So in that case, then, let's just use Bill Clinton's one of his elections as an example. If the Electoral College was absent and you turn to the Constitution for what to do, what would we have had to do?
Well, it might have gone to the House of Representatives to decide that. We don't really know since we've always had the Electoral College. But if you didn't have a majority, then does that, how do you decide it then? And we don't have a good solution for that. The Electoral College is the one that makes that decision now. But without that majority, we might look more like England, and then you could have, you could have some kind of, you know, presumably you could have some kind of runoff, or there is provision that there's, if it's a tie vote, it goes to the House of Representatives. That's happened a time or two in the country, and then the House of Representatives makes that decision. And it would be, this last time it would have been the Republicans who would have won it.
It is kind of odd that a party who purports to be one who wants every vote to be counted fairly seems to want to be creating an imbalance now.
It does. They want those large states primarily because they have such large presence in the large cities, and those tend to also be in the large states. So it's you can just sort of look at the how it structures it. So California is our most populous state. It has actually more people than the 21 smallest states. There are 55 electoral votes in California, but among those 21 smallest states, you have 92 electoral votes. So it's not a huge shift, but it is a shift, a little bit of a thumb on the scales to help small states still have some power and desire, and politicians end up going. You know, one of Hillary Clinton's problems is she did not go to, like, Wisconsin and campaign there. Had she gone to a few of the other states, she focused on the large states. Had she gone to a few of the other states, she might have won. But it's trying to keep, the Electoral College tries to keep them from doing exactly what Hillary Clinton did.
On the flip side, too, a lot of Democrats are sniffing Texas as drifting blue. If that were to happen, California, Texas, Illinois, and New York, New Jersey as well. That'd be, if you didn't have the Electoral College, that would be a pretty strong power base, tough to overcome.
It would, yeah. Between Texas, California, and New York, you'd have most of the votes. And of course, in Texas, as you say, there's been long predictions that the state is drifting blue. There's been no evidence of that until this last election that we had in November, and I think that's probably more of a Beto O'Rourke factor than it was a major shift in the state. We'll see. But for the past decade, the state has actually been voting more conservative, except for this 2016. So we'll see if that's an anomaly, or if, 2018. We'll see in 2020 if that was an anomaly or actually a trend that's happening.
Dr. Merrill Matthews, who is a resident scholar at the Institute for Policy Innovation, IPI.org is their website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So if the talk became action, what would it take to eliminate the Electoral College?
It takes a constitutional amendment to eliminate it, to actually eliminate it. However, what Democrats are pushing right now, and a few Republicans, is a thing called the National Popular Vote Compact. And what that means is that if a state were to decide to do this, then when an election is held, the state's electors would go to whoever won the popular vote across the country. So regardless of how your state voted, your state's electors would go to whoever won the popular vote. Now, this isn't far-fetched because the 13 states and the District of Columbia have already voted and have already passed legislation to do this at the time that they get 270 electoral votes. Now, right now, the 13 states and the District of Columbia together have 184 electoral votes. If they get enough states joining the compact that makes up 270, then the law goes into effect, and in essence, you would have enough states saying we're going to do this national popular vote compact, and other states really wouldn't matter because those states would say who won the popular vote. That's who all of our electors will go to, and it's a done deal.
One of those states which is examining this idea too is Florida, which that's always an interesting state to watch with any election.
Yes. there have been several states that have looked at it because there is a sort of a sense that we ought to have a that the popular vote should win. That was not the founders' ideas. This was never meant to be a pure democracy. It was meant to be a republic, a representative republic, where we elect people who go and represent us. But the presidency, the president was never intended to be that, and it was an attempt, once again, to sort of keep that tyranny of the majority. There were several protections in the Constitution to try to minimize the impact of the development of the tyranny of majority. Progressives have been chipping away at that for decades. The amendment that changed the vote for senators from being elected in the state house to being a popular vote was a progressive deal to try to put more pressure on the Senate to respond to the popular vote rather than to what the state was interested in.
Dr. Matthews has recently written about this idea, too, in a column for the LA Times. We've linked to that, and you can learn more and more about this issue past the point we've had time to talk about here. He's also a resident scholar with the Institute for Policy and Innovation, IPI.org, is their website. Dr. Merrill Matthews, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much.